from the twisted realm of science and the darkest pits of reason comes chilling tales of godlessness. Bear witness to the unfathomable terror that is the Good Atheist.
Welcome to the GoodAtheist.net podcast. My name is Jacob Forte.
I'm Ryan Harkness.
Episode 103, everybody. And today is a mailbag episode mixed in with a little bit of, I don't want to say current news, but current atheist-y news.
Stuff
in the atheist world.
Who knew that the podcast would have stuff?
I know. We're evolving. We're getting more stuff-centric. And we just keep trying new stuff. We tried last show... We did a Bible verses, and it looks like favorite Bible quotes, I mean. And it looks like a lot of people thought quite highly of it. They thought it was hilarious. So we're going to be doing more of this kind of stuff.
Yeah, well, sometimes we overlook the Bible as a great source of comedy.
It's so true. I mean, Penn Jillette said it best, I think, that if you want to make a person stop believing the Bible, use the Bible, right? It's like, bam, use the fucking Bible. But it's not, for us, it's going to be more than that. There are also going to be challenges to get people to find their favorite Quran verses or who knows what else. We can pick and choose. There's plenty of hilarious old texts out there that tries to lay it down like they know something, when clearly they do not. They don't know shit.
Cite your favorite Dead Sea Scroll. Woo! Good fun.
Tremendous fun. Fun for the whole family. Okay. The first subject we're going to be talking about before the mailbag is actually a speech that Phil Plait, the bad astronomer, gave at the Amazing Meeting 8. So the Amazing Meeting, that's James Randi's foundation. They have like kind of a skeptical meeting of sorts. And so he was one of the speakers there. And during his speech, he chose basically, I think that the title of his speech is "Don't Be a Dick." And I'll give you the short version of it, I think. It's basically that he feels there are many or too many atheists that are everybody's grill, being relatively insulty, calling people idiots and retards, and that this is preventing rationality from blossoming, that these are undermining the efforts of the diplomatic atheists who are just trying to say, listen up, yo. I mean, they believe in something and it's hard to get out of it and you got to be compassionate and don't say nothing mean or else they might just totally turn around and be like, fuck off, you bastards. Mm-hmm. So that's basically...
The gist.
I think that's fair. Did I miss anything?
Well, I mean, he tried to do the whole skeptic thing and back it up with a bunch of data as to why being a dick doesn't work as well as... something else. Didn't really get into, you know, how something else is supposed to work when something else obviously hadn't. You know, the whole, you know, trading facts and being reasonable about it. That hasn't really gotten us all that far either. So I'm just not convinced that this whole being a dick thing is having any less of an effect than the being civilized about it.
Well, in the blogosphere, there was a lot of people that were kind of contrary to it. It was like really like boom, you know, like in the blogosphere, atheist blogosphere, it was like waves. As some groups were like, I agree, and others were like, I disagree, well, and know, it was a strong movement either way.
It's funny, in his "Don't Be a Dick" speech, he kind of came across as a dick, and I thought that was very ironic.
It was a little bit ironic because I did feel he was aggressive, I think, maybe. Is that what you were saying? Kind of like he was being a dick? What is dick for you?
I don't know. He was kind of smarmy about it, pretty cocksure about himself. He was being a dick about his dick thing. It's the best way I can fucking put it.
All right. Well, I love the way you're always able
trust
to...
trust me, I recognize a dick. I'm a professional dick.
He is. He is literally a dick for a living, so he knows a dick when he sees it. It sounds wrong or sounds dirty when I say it like that. My answer, actually, I put up a post, and my answer was actually saying, I kind of like being a dick. You know, I am a little bit of a dick. And my argument was to say, what is so wrong what really is so wrong when the worst that you do as any movement is that you ridicule someone for what I feel are legitimate reasons? It's like, why should I laugh at your belief in ghosts? Because it's ridiculous. Ha ha! And I'm like, if that makes me a dick, that is what I am. I think to some degree, everybody who listens to the show recognizes that although I may pretend to be fair-minded, I am still a dick.
I kind of look at it like atheism is a rainbow, and it needs all those different colors in there. And dick, I don't know what color is represented by dick, but dick definitely needs to be in there. It's a core component. It's like the red in there, as far as I'm concerned.
It was interesting to
maybe
see.
Maybe even the blue.
I think it was what was really interesting, and I don't think you saw any of this, was a bit of a, I'm going to just say a bit of catfighting that went on past this, because the guy from the Atheist Experience kind of confronted Phil at the end of it. Well, confronted. He asked him, basically, who are these people that are screaming in everybody's face and saying the stuff that you were saying? Like, who are these prominent atheists? And Phil couldn't answer the question or didn't choose to answer the question. But he felt that the way that it was phrased by the Atheist Experience guy,
mm-hmm,
was kind of a straw man of saying, well, you know, you're just asking me on the spot to find examples, and I don't have one. And that's not, it's like a gotcha journalism.
And besides, we all know what he's talking about. Those people on forums who are just endless a-holes about everything.
Right, but I think that the perception was that it was coming from other prominent atheists, the people who are trying to spread the message. Mm-hmm. So to some people, I'm like, are you referring to atheist bloggers? You know, he's
referring to Christopher Hitchens?
Or even more basically, are you referring to P.Z. Myers? Because there's plenty of people that would say P.Z. Myers is a dick.
It's true. He actually outspites us quite often, which is impressive.
I know. He does shit that's way more hardcore than what we do.
Mm-hmm.
We just say it in a more hardcore way. That's it. We're pussies, but we use tough language make us look big.
We need swear words to get it up to where P.Z. Myers is at.
Completely. I mean, we are wusses. We are limp dick wusses. So we use swearing. But yeah, he was saying he wasn't referring at all to P.Z. Myers.
Mm-hmm.
But the whole thing was, who exactly are you referring to? And if it's the trolls in forums and things like that, the people that go on just because they want to start a fight or whatever, I mean, come on, man. Are you going to go over and say, oh, everyone needs to stop being a dick right now? There's just going to be some dicks, okay? There's going to be some dicks about. I don't really feel that that's the biggest reason why everybody else won't let go of their fucking delusion. Because we're dicks about it? Yeah. Yeah, that seems like the number one reason to keep believing in something. Well, I'd be an atheist if it wasn't for all those dicks. But otherwise, it's completely fantastic. I don't see why I'm not thinking this way.
Yeah, he made a weird argument at the beginning of the speech where he basically asked everybody if they ever believed in anything stupid. And then he asked them if they've ever changed their mind because somebody told them they were a retard. Because they believe that. And of course, everybody likes to think, oh no, nobody's ever gotten in my face and maybe changed my beliefs just by telling me I'm a moron. But I could pretty much guarantee you that every single person on this planet has changed at least some of their opinions about some things because somebody got in their face and called them a moron about it.
Well, you know, I speak from direct experience when I can tell you, Phil, that is not the fucking case. Trust me, I had a reputation when I was younger of being a prominent dick, all right? I was a real piece of work.
You still have a decent reputation.
I still have a very decent reputation, but I've nicened
up. Don't think your glory days are over.
Shut up. I've nicened up. You know, I'm a lot better. Let's just say that. But you know directly that me having been in certain people's faces has completely and utterly altered their perception. I mean, it's weird how sometimes you just need someone to be there to deconstruct what the fuck you believe and pull the rug from underneath you for like 5 seconds. And you know what? At first, it's not going to make an impact. That's true. You know, I see it a lot. Is that the beginning, something that I said, a person will hate me for fucking months. But then when they get beyond the whole, oh, I hate Jacob because of what he said, and instead focus on what the fuck I was saying, then all of a sudden it kind of, something germinates in their minds. That's how you sow an idea. Sometimes you have to fucking plant it in deep. And the only way to do that is to not be nice about it. hey, we have a room for diplomats. They're the ones that kind of like coax all the other ones that are all fence sitters. And well, I just don't know. They need good diplomats. Oh, but
and there's nothing wrong with the diplomats either. I just like to say. And that's one thing about this speech, which is good, is that, you know, it's a discussion that had to be had. And I like the fact that, you know, Phil stepped up and had it.
Sure, absolutely. It's the type of discussion that we need to have. And I'm also glad to see that there's just different sides, different little camps, because I think they're necessary and they're important. You need people that sort of like, you know, say the friendly atheist, who's just takes
friendly.
He's just friendly, all right? There's a reason he's called friendly. Mine is a bit of an oxymoron. It's false. That's what's so great about it. I'm not that good. I'm like dark. I'm sprinkled with bitterness. But
you're more the evil atheist.
I'm a little evil. Yeah. Very sinful. I would say that many of the things that I have done would send me straight to hell. Like, that is it. Like, you can't get back from that shit. You can't. But anyways, my general point is that there's nothing wrong with the diplomats. I salute them. But at the same time, you know what? It ain't fair to suddenly say, well, you never need a bit of an asshole around to call people on their shit. Because when you don't have the assholes around, when you decide we're only going to be nice, some bad things can happen, okay? Can I just reiterate here the point that we are in a historically unique time, okay? There has been no other time like this where you can openly talk about how you don't believe in God. And even have conventions about this, about how to change people's minds
sounds
to the belief in God.
Fire hoses.
It sounds like the kind of thing that a couple hundred years ago, you got on your fucking horse, you got your sword, and you're like, we need to go kill some motherfuckers, because this is going down right now. They're having these discussions. Now we can have these discussions, but if we let down our guard for like 5 minutes, it can go back to that, right? We have to push hard against the anti-vaxxers, against the fucking creationists, against the scary motherfuckers that I was talking about last bonus show. The guy who said that we needed a Christian theology or a benevolent dictator? He was serious, man. He was fucking serious. And what's the best way to reach these people? Diplomacy? They are not interested in your diplomacy. I mean, even though he was deriding the idea that we're at war with something, is that there can still be ideas that conflict with one another regardless of how much diploma you try to shield it with. That ultimately what you believe conflicts entirely and sometimes violently with someone else, particularly people who have these beliefs. Okay? And they will be offended by your very existence. They have a problem with you. It's not like they've been cool about it.
Well, the conversion rate is not going to be very high regardless of what tact you take. So sometimes it's just better to state reality and call people on their shit than get into the nitty-gritty and start arguing with these people over facts.
Well, we're going to get into this because there's one of the questions that's in the mailbag deals specifically with that. And I'm going to get back to that in a couple minutes. But you're absolutely right that... And I feel that to some degree, the real problem that we have is just that everybody thinks that there's this one tactic that's perfect, that works. And you're like, just what you do will either work or not work. I think to some degree, what we do works. It fulfills a particular need. It's not everybody that needs diplomacy. Most of the fucking people that listen to our show, they need to vent. At the end of it, they tell me like, it was like drinking a really cold glass of water amongst a desert of fucking ignorance, and I just needed to hear it straight for like 10 minutes to feel sane again. It's like a service we offer. We're dicks, and it's a service, man. It's like people get to be dicks through us. Feels good, doesn't it, people? It's like that's what your crack is. That's why I even dare to try to charge for it, because it's crack now. You're like, I just need somebody to vent, please.
Hate Jesus, the baby Jesus.
I hate them so much. I
hate his stupid baby face.
Now, with that said, I think to one degree, like, everybody will know is that, sure, I'm a dick, but at the same time, you know, I try to have a sense of humor about the whole thing. And this is also why there's no need for screaming. If you're into somebody's face and you're screaming, that's using violence. It's not being a dick. That's being a tyrant. For me, being a dick is just someone telling you something and you're just like... That's ridiculous. That belief is ridiculous. And sure, that's dickish. It's dickish to call somebody else's ludicrous belief stupid. But why are we coddling people's delusions? Maybe that's the real problem here. You know, I'm just going to put that out there. We coddle these delusions and make sure everybody... Are you okay? Did I offend you by thinking that what you think is infantile? I'm so sorry. Come on now. So much coddling. It's not helping. You're still an you still believe in an infantile ideal. And meanwhile, we have to pretend that no, this is completely and utterly logical. Absolutely. No, it is. I don't buy it. And you know, the one thing, too, that really kind of, it didn't annoy me, but I think that we have to get away from trying to explain situations via analogies. Okay? Phil used the analogy of the hammer and the nail, saying, well, you know, if you put more smaller efforts into driving the nail, you're not going to damage the wood rather than if you were just pounding away at it. But you're saying, but my whole thing is that the analogy is incomplete. We have to get out of this habit of using analogies alone to try to explain a really complex situation, because I don't feel that the analogies get to the root of it, and plus you always get caught trying to debate the stupid fucking analogy.
Or in our case, our analogies just lead to dumber analogies, which lead to dumber analogies, and next thing we know, we're probably talking about disgusting sex habits, which is usually how it rolls.
Yeah,
at least with us.
Most of my analogies usually revolve around sex, particularly on the other show.
See, it's like having sex with a girl. At first, it's clean and dry. By the end, it's just a sloppy mess, and nobody's happy about it.
Well, maybe some people are happy about it. See, now we're arguing the analogy. This is the problem with analogies, because I could argue his analogy of a hammer and the nail all day. I could say, well, what if your goal is to just get the fucking nail in as soon as possible? Do you really want to worry about some cosmetic difference to a piece of wood that you're never going to see?
I really couldn't give a damn about the Christian wall that I'm wasting.
Bashing.
Yeah.
See, there you go. There's plenty of reasons why. I just feel that the analogy may prove to be correct in your mind, saying like, yes, in that analogy, that is the goal. But you're like, but this is not hammering nails, all right? It's just to illustrate a point. But we get too caught up in analogies. And I really feel that the subtleties of how a message of atheism gets across is not explained succinctly with a hammer and a nail and a board. I just don't feel that that's really bringing the discussion to an important light. And besides, I feel like it's just rhetorical for like no reason. You're saying, well, the people that are hammering it in hard, you know, you could just hammer in hard the first couple ones and then you just ease it in a little. Ease it in. I just use your analogy against you, sir. Just use it against you. Basically, my point is let's stop using analogies for these things. Unless they're sex analogies, because now I see that that's actually kind of necessary.
And they're fun, too. They're so much fun.
The last thing I wanted to dissect before we move on is this thing that that I kind of got from Phil, which he was saying that the atheist argument is a tough sell, and therefore we need to be coddling people and into it, and we need to be understanding and all this other, the diplomacy route. And I was actually thinking to myself, you know what, though? For everybody who says that it's the more difficult and the harder position to hold, I just feel that when I started believing that, I was just being honest. And that's it. And honesty was more important to me than feeling good about shit. And, you know, although it might be more hard emotionally for some people, maybe for some it really isn't. It's not a fucking big deal. You're like, oh no, I don't get to Special Heaven Playland. I wasn't looking forward to it that much.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've gone over it a couple times. My atheist experience is quite minimal.
it barely exists.
I did have that whole week where I was thinking about everybody that's died is no longer in heaven. I always thought heaven was just as factual as the South. Or is it? Is Santa in the South Pole or the North Pole? North Pole.
He's
right?
North Pole. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. There you go.
He's in the place that's actually not
as
land.
As fantastical as the North Pole will be in another 50 years when it's gone.
North Poles, you mean that large watery area where the fish people live? Oh, yes. There's quite a nice area around there. Yeah, okay, so basically the point was, I feel that, you know, the whole it's a tough sell angle, I don't buy it all that much. All right, for a lot of people that view intellectual integrity as important, or for anybody that's just basically never bought into it, which is a surprising amount of people. It's just the people that don't say anything because it either doesn't matter to them or it's not really in their face, so it's not an issue. And trust me, I meet these people all the fucking time. You know these people, and they would probably identify themselves as Christian. But when you just have a conversation with them, they're like, yeah, that idea is stupid. It's dumb. But I don't dare say anything. I don't dare rock the boat. Whatever, I can live with it. I don't give a shit. And that's how a lot of people are. They really don't give a shit. But we need to get people to start giving a little bit more of a shit. Maybe that's the real problem.
Just about, the wedge issues. The things that are happening, the bad things.
The really bad things, we're
stonings
dumb.
Stonings in the Middle East.
Ugh. Or
people being set on fire in Africa.
Or not even just set on fire, dismembered because they're albinos. And fucking people think that their skin and their bones will have medical properties. And you're like, that is horrible. What is wrong with you? It's disgusting and stupid.
The most horrible thing about all that tiger teeth and rhino horn stuff is it doesn't even give you a boner.
I know. I mean, if it did, I could understand it.
If it did before Viagra was around, I would be shocked that there were any of these things left in the world.
Well, it's true, eh? But I mean, people believed that it worked, so for them it was just as true.
Yeah, 1 billion Chinese can't be wrong.
They certainly can. Many billions of people are wrong. Well, he was saying something interesting in the lecture. He was saying, how many of you believed in these, in UFOs and ghosts and all this other kind of stuff? And it made me think about, for the most part, becoming an adult is unlearning all the stuff that you thought you knew that was wrong. Just things that you just observe in nature, false inferences that you would make, right? All the time, people sort of assume, when I did something that I was looking at the lamppost and all of a sudden the light went out. I must have done something. It's ludicrous. What the hell is wrong with you? The light just went out. You were around when that happened. You think the whole fucking universe revolves around you? I got some news for you. No, it does not. And to some degree, you got to spend your whole life untraining yourself all those stupid beliefs that you probably had, right? The Santa Claus, fucking Easter Bunny. Me, it was like conspiracy theories and ghosts and paranormal. That was my big thing. And I had to fucking unlearn that nonsense. But that's what you do when you become an adult. And I think it's a natural part of being an adult. So long as you don't coddle people for having those dumb beliefs. So long as there's a few people, dicks like us, that are around to tell people, "Pah! That's ridiculous."
Yeah, people that take care of those 17-year-olds who still believe in Santa Claus, just tell them they're stupid. Because that's one of the first things, a perfect example of someone being told they're a stupid idiot and then eventually not believing. Santa Claus in elementary school.
Yeah, somebody came in your face.
Someone got there. Yeah. That and the Easter Bunny, too. And let me tell you what. I bet you after one, just happening once, I bet you the next year, you did not fucking voice that opinion in elementary school again.
Yeah, and can I just remind everybody of the effectiveness of ridicule to control behavior? Seriously? I just put that out there?
Monkeys use it.
Yeah. Everybody uses it. I mean, just look at kids as a perfect example. Again, that's why I love the Santa analogy. That was why I was saying, and I would go back to this, that I'm going to teach my kids fucking Santa Claus for sure. This is going to be your first religious tutorial that adults can be full of shit, the systems of belief can be completely false, and that you just need to figure that out. That's part of being a grown-up. It's your first little test. And you're going to probably notice that some people are going to be dicks about it. There's going to be some dicks. They're going to tell you that you're an idiot for believing that. And that's just part of being human, having to deal with those, I don't know, how could I describe it? Our inequities, yeah? Dealing with the fact that we're just not perfect and we can be angry and we can sometimes be, unequal to one another. And that's just it. Just deal with it. And it's a necessary part of the human fucking condition. All right, let's go to the mailbag. But first,
We're
running the commercial again. We're going to run that bitch to death. All right, we'll be back after these messages.
Who is that immaculately dressed man in the Good Atheist t-shirt?
That man / woman is a fashionable person wearing the latest gear coming straight from the goodatheist.net, baby.
How can I get my hands on one of these shirts?
On just one, don't be a fool, man. Get three, even though there's only one design. Jesus saves, you need to get it.
buy this or burn in hell.
You want a time for that?
Yeah, please.
28:58, just 29 minutes.
29 minutes. Okay, let me open up the mailbag.
Okay, I'm going to read them. You answer them. I'll throw some feedback back in if I have any answers for it, and we'll just burn through them.
Sounds good.
Because we're already pretty far into this. Okay, we are back. I guess I'm taking control because I am the only person capable of reading.
It's true. I'm a terrible, terrible reader. I even tried to do one of those audiobooks before, and then I realized that I can't read at the same speed that... I can't talk at the same speed that I read. They're not synced well, so I suck at it. Obviously, I'm not an idiot, but I am, to some degree, like everybody else, an idiot.
I got to use my super special reading powers to get us to this mailbag.
Get us through this.
A Brown Lamp asks, I've seen many believers dismiss the violence and absurd misogynistic laws in the Bible because much of it was written in the Old Testament. According to them, humanity wasn't ready for the nice God in the New Testament yet. How do you respond to that?
All right, well, here's how I respond to this. If you really want me to give you, what is my one phrase to tell a person who's like, oh, the New Testament is so much better and don't listen to the Old Testament part of the Bible, I will tell you that there is no argument that you can use that will convince them, except for maybe this, all right? Maybe what you need to convince them is saying like, okay, fine. Yes, it is an improvement. It is an improvement, but it isn't, number one, it isn't the only way that people live. And people live well everywhere else. And if they can live well everywhere else, whatever the laws of Jesus or what have you are not contingent on the rest of the world. They were just things that people made up. They convinced you that the whole world revolves around this little ideology, that their little religion, that if it wasn't for that religion and their beliefs and their little laws in the Bible, we wouldn't have society. It would all fall apart. We'd be like barbarians bashing each other with clubs.
Of course, when religious people got control, we had that dark period.
We had people bashing each other with clubs. We had the very same thing that I just said.
Yeah.
We had ludicrous violence. You know, and it's not like these things didn't exist before religion. No, of course they did. Again, it was around before religion was around. Fine. Stop taking the credit for everything. You didn't invent the world, all right? And that's what I would say. I'm like, the New Testament didn't invent the world. And even if it is an improvement over the Old Testament, so what? It's not good enough anymore.
It's still got a whole bunch of stuff in there. Like, lots of people say, oh, the Old Testament is all the bad stuff, but the New Testament's what we're following. No, lots of bad stuff in the New Testament as well. The way I look at it is it shows you promise. To me, I look at it and say, look, if Christians can stray this far from their holy works, hey, maybe Muslims can too. And like 100 years down the road, people will just laugh about all of the really fucked up things in the Quran. And everyone's just like, yeah, that's ridiculous. Don't even pay attention to that.
Man, we're not going to live in that fucking future.
I mean, imagine a world where the satanic verses was just all the bad stuff that everybody, like all the bad stuff everybody agrees is bad. I know that's a very profound, complicated statement.
It is really profound and complicated. I think it encapsulates everything.
Simple Ryan says simple things.
He is simple. Oh, by the way, I wanted to apologize. You were right when you called both Michelangelo a sculptor and a painter. So I was the fool, sir.
Yeah.
Michelangelo's David.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was thinking.
Let's see. I was the fool.
Mm.
And you were correct on that one. So Simple Ryan can still be wise.
Okay, Dark Passenger asks, could you talk about Christopher Hitchens and his state of health?
Have you been seeing any of the videos recently? Like
interviews
on TV?
I saw a picture of him on Slate where he looked like fresh out of a chemo lab.
I am conflicted about his health because, number one, he seems still really tough. Like, okay, he's going through chemo and he doesn't look good, but he's still going all around giving like 1 hour fucking interviews with Charlie Rose and just making the rounds. Like, sure, he's not traveling a lot and I'm sure the chemo is like poison, but I have seen people that were in better health and younger get their asses kicked more and be like more useless than what he was.
But you never know how it works with cancer, man. Remember, there was that world famous kickboxer guy from
Andy
the 80s,
Hoog.
And he was the like champion of the world, and he fucking won this big one night tournament, beating all the best kickboxers in the world. And then a week later,
he
found out he had cancer. And then what was it? A couple months later, he was.
I think
dead.
It was like 2 months.
Yeah, it
or
was
something after that. It was ridiculous. You were like, he was in the best shape of his life. There was no deterioration. It was just he was alive and then he was fucking dead.
It's like you just need the data on what's going on. And I mean, Hitchens, wasn't he saying that the cancer's in his lymphs, which does not sound good.
It doesn't sound good.
Does not sound positive. And he was saying it would be a quote-unquote miracle if he was still around in 5 years. His words.
Right. Okay.
So,
you
know, he's on your list of people that you want to meet, right?
Yeah, that's not going to happen.
What, you don't think in 5 years you can meet him?
I don't think so, no. God, we're still unknowns.
Mm.
And plus, even when you are known, I could certainly meet him, shake his hand, and say, thank you for your hours of entertainment. I mean, what the fuck am I going to say when you have like that 30 seconds, right? Of saying, excuse me, can I have a long, protracted conversation with you before you perish, sir? I would really much like that.
Oh, you know, we are, what, like number 3 or 4 in the atheist podcast search engine thing?
It's the final hope to being able to do that. But I have to imagine that a man who is getting closer to that starts to see his time as precious, too precious for some douchey podcast. So that is my regret, the fact that perhaps I should have moved faster on this when it was within my grasp, but now it is slipping from me.
You know, all those curmudgeon-y atheists are getting up in age. You got to keep that in mind. These are not spring chickens.
No, well, you're going to need who's going to be the second generation of, like, atheist thinkers, man? Who's going to be the next generation?
Okay, Dark Passenger also asks about how to deal with close friends that are religious and have a mental barrier that blocks logical and critical thinking. Also, their inability to comprehend the science they research without the aid of God. So basically, how do you deal with friends who just ignore reality? Yeah, to me, I mean, I've dealt with it before. I know how you do it, is you either make fun of them or you just don't hang out with them and they aren't your friends. That's just usually how it magically happens.
It finds its way into that kind of scenario, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because like I've got a whole bunch of spirity, hippie chick type friends that don't gel well with you, and how I deal with them when it comes to all the ridiculous stuff they believe is I kind of compartmentalize it. It's like I just don't bring that stuff up. It's like I know their position, I know mine. I don't feel like we have to butt heads over it. There's still a lot of fun things we can do together.
That's where you and I differ. So I don't recommend my style, because my style is no style. It's kind of like I'm not going to say endlessly harass them. But just by the nature of the way that I speak, it's going to cause conflict. I mean, I wear my atheism on my sleeve hard, man. That's the whole, you know, Jesus saves is kind of a way for me to entice people into conversations, because I'm not afraid to voice my opinion. There was a girl from Greenpeace that came by just yesterday. I was not afraid to voice my opinion about how I felt about Greenpeace. I wasn't going to back down. I was like, I want you to be aware of what I think. Just in case you haven't thought of this and you might want to re-examine how you view something. And that's all I want. I don't want to change anyone's opinion. I want them to change their own opinion. I want Inception to happen on their own. I love making that geek reference. Hopefully everybody gets it. But I want to plant the seeds of something in a person's mind. And I think the way you have to do that is you got to challenge those ideas. I'm a challenger. That doesn't allow me to have a lot of friends that are very religious. For the people that are religious typically know to not talk about that with me, for the most part, because they're just like, I can't argue with him. He will win, and even though I will feel that I'm right, and it will frustrate me. I mean, you know what that's like. Things that I'm wrong about, I can still win the argument.
Yeah, I like to think more along that. Most people will agree on 98% of everything. So don't let that 2%, you know, steam you too much. If they're good friends. I mean, if they're not, then who cares? But, you know, with all friends, you assess what they're like and make a decision as to whether or not it's worth whatever it's worth to do what you got to do to stay friends.
I mean, obviously, here's what I would say maybe is the best and probably maybe even the only thing for you to be able to do, is I would ask them the honest question of, have they ever really conceived or thought of a universe without God? I think this is something that people who believe in God don't seem to do a lot.
But again, this is proselytizing.
This is a question. And if the person says yes, then I would say, then at least to some degree, you gave both sides of the argument some thought. Because if a person says no, then you're like, well, you can't, after that, pretend that you're open-minded.
Shut up your mouth about your stupid bullshit, huh?
Then you can't profess to be open-minded about it. And that's as simple as that. You know, and then you can, that'll be the end of that discussion. Of course, if that's the end of the friendship, don't come crying to me.
Yeah, so if you want to throw that bomb in there, do that. Or if you want to
throw that grenade,
listen to me.
Right.
Van City Skeptic asks, what do you think about specifically secular-based/driven political parties running for government at any level, civic, state, country? Good, bad, totally worth trying? Shouldn't bother? Are we approaching or in an age where secular parties should be trying to ramp up? We've already got stuff like this. I mean, the atheist bus ad people, lots of groups down in the States are actively challenging things that they see as, infringements of Freedom of Religion Acts and stuff like that. There's lots of stuff going on.
I think that I think it is worthwhile, because even if you're not going to get any votes, it's just an important way to show the fact that you're out there and you're trying to reach out. You're trying to represent people's views. It's up to the public to decide whether or not they want that. You know, they'll decide. The people will decide. It's just nice to have the option. You know, to have a person who's like, I'm going to fight to get, you know, say, creationism out of schools. I'm going to fight to get science back into classrooms. I think that's a really important thing. There are political parties that are saying exactly the opposite of that. I'm going to get creationism in school. I'm going to get science out of people's heads. And creationism, I'm going to jam it in there.
Yeah, and it's interesting the way that it usually works is that the religious groups usually try and get their candidates in, and it's the candidates themselves who are running these platforms saying they're going to do these things, while as far as secularists go, it's more groups that are just working to make sure that these specific issues don't happen, and they have no interest at all in anything else, in the power or any of the other anything else on the platform.
Well, they're not interested in playing the game, and I gotta tell you, when you don't play the game, you don't win any ball games, all right? Like, you fucking have to get out there. Not everybody has to, just some people. You know, it's kind of there's this one potential patron, and he was asking me, he's like, do I have to buy a membership? Because I'm not really into the whole membership thing as a concept. And you know what? That is fine for a person to think like that. More power to them. I don't want every atheist to say, yes, I must be part of the collective group of non-believers. No, fuck no. I don't want everybody who's a non-believer to be active. Just the ones that are really passionate about it to be. That's all. I just want the people who care about the issues to make them issues. And I think there's a political thing there. There are party lines that could be drawn up according to these kinds of things. Now, you can be very sincere and say, well, listen, it's not the entirety of our platform, but many of these platforms are along these lines. And I think it's a good opportunity to say, hey, we're just going to put it out there and see what the fuck happens. Jeez. Next one.
Okay. Ryman asks, what are your thoughts on Israel?
Oh, man. I don't know. You know what? I realize that I'm too ignorant about Israel to really have enough of an opinion about it. Even though I know a good deal, say probably more than most, but not as much as some, I still feel like I'm just not getting it.
I feel like I got a pretty good grasp on it. It just, you know, obviously it's a religious issue at its core, but the current situation and the current thing that is blocking progress is purely political. So that's the problem with what's going on right now, is that you got right-wingers in power in Israel who have no real interest in changing the situation as it stands now, and everything else in the Middle East getting hotter by the month with Iran getting, with the pressure with Iran going up, and obviously Afghanistan still being unstable, probably Iraq as well soon. So it's fun. It's a powder keg.
I enjoy it. This is why I cannot... If I start thinking about everything that's happened in politics. I will go crazy. All right, I will lose my mind. I have to stay sane to some degree. It's almost unavoidable, though. Jeez, it's everywhere. It's permeable. I think maybe sometimes people give small little things too much importance. Like, did you hear about that Dr. Laura and her crazy racist rants that got her kicked off of radio?
Yeah, she said the N-word.
Like 11 times.
Oh, did she?
Yeah.
Yeah, she wasn't allowed to do that.
11 times. And I think that the other problem, too, is that she... Her whole,
but you know what,
attitude was say, oh, my First Amendment rights have been violated because other people were pressuring the sponsors to drop me. You know that's an entire. We could have a whole show talking about that shit. How ludicrous!
Trust me, we understand very well that while you are allowed to say whatever you want to say, you are probably going to have to pay the consequences for whatever you said. And that's, you know, free speech ain't free. You got to pay.
You got to pay for whatever
you fucking say. You got to pay for that.
It's very true. I mean, I was thinking about doing some short little comics. I call them tracts, kind of chick tracts. And I've been working on some, and specifically I wanted to do some on Scientology and on the story of Scientology in general. But that's with the understanding that although the Church of Scientology denies the fact that this is their mythology, they nevertheless have taken legal actions against people who have told other people about it. So there are consequences to the freedom of speech that I am about to try to employ. You know, specifically religious nut jobs that want to silence troublemakers. Going back to the reason why sometimes you got to be a dick. Because they're gigantic dicks on their side. They're so dickish that they will harbor child rapists. They'll harbor them. They'll protect them. That's dickishness. That to the millionth degree. That's what you're dealing with. That's why I was saying before, if the worst that we are like mockers, ooh, I'm afraid. I'm like, you should expect that. Mockery is normal. It's a part of the human process. All right.
Okay, Jan Hudson asks, I'd like to hear you guys tackle this prepackaged pseudo-controversy about the so-called Ground Zero Mosque, which is in fact neither a mosque nor is it located at Ground Zero. And the fact that there are several media personalities and politicians on both sides of the political divide that support or advocate the outright violation of the U.S. Constitution's First Amendment by banning the construction of mosques on both local and national levels.
Have you been following this at all?
Unfortunately.
So what is your opinion first? I want to hear your opinion first.
That there's no law against building this thing there. It being there is not going to affect anything. Therefore, anybody getting their panties in a wad is being stupid.
I am just constantly amazed at how religions just keep proving us right, that they just can't seem to do the right thing ever. You ask yourself, what is the right thing in the situation, right? Should you outright ban a religion from building their temple somewhere when you yourself are so paranoid about that very thing happening? Just think about the kind of things that you're opening up. Just you yourselves, right? Imagine just in some nightmarish scenario, an atheist monster comes over and he's like, I'm going to use this law to say that for all churches. Fuck them. This law exists, therefore I'm going to use it.
Yeah, and don't think that atheists won't be dicks and do that if they get given the opportunity.
Yeah, there have been an atheist or two out there that have been royal pieces of crap, and they definitely will use something like that, something that a religious person does because they fear other religions. No religion because... take away its claws to some degree, and it should be laughed at.
Half the towns in North America have dickheads keeping, baby Jesus mangers from being set up at City Hall because it violates religious statures and stuff like that. So if we had the opportunity to get rid of all churches, I think we'd probably take that up.
I know I would. But I don't think any one person should have the ability to make choices for other people. And that's why don't make that choice for other people. Don't create laws that aren't necessary, especially ones that work against your long-term interests, religious people.
Yeah, but this is the whole thing. There's no law being recommended. This is a wedge issue. It's a political wedge issue. I don't quite understand where it's going because it just comes off as bigoted and racist. So I don't really understand what...
Well, the problem is it's being framed along this line where it's saying, oh, the reason why we're taking offense is because this is the religion that caused this, and they're just opening up the wound, and we're very sensitive about this. So this is the justification. Like, I'm sensitive, and you're trying to be all up in my grill. Remember when we were saying that, you know, I don't think anybody has a right to not be offended? It's definitely one of those times you're like, too bad, baby. Stop being a giant baby. That's what you are. You're a racist baby.
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 Okay, Dale asks, so what does a win look like for the good atheist? If you have a goal with this enterprise, how would you know when you've accomplished it? How can we help? I hope the answer isn't billions of dollars from your patrons.
No, the answer is not billions of dollars from my patrons. I don't want to be a billionaire from doing what I do. That's ludicrous anyways. What is the dream of the good atheist? Well, I can tell you that the one thing that I would love to do is I would love to make micropayments and web communities function a lot more intelligently. Like, I think that you can combine social networking with content production and you can get people to do stuff with you to help promote what you do. And this is what I want to do ultimately. I want to be able to get and harness the skills and abilities of the people that listen to the show and say, hey, do you want to help out? Because the ultimate vision of what I have in terms of what The Good Atheist becomes is like a kind of a blueprint to get other people who want to produce content similar to what we do, an opportunity to do that, an opportunity to use our model, an opportunity to use even our system, you know, that's a system that we want to design. I think this kind of thing would change the way that artists regard their work, distribute their work. I think there needs to be a massive change, and I have strong opinions about how that ties into copyright and how we manage new realities in the digital media where things can be replicated ad infinitum, you know, it's just for no cost. And you're like, what do we do in that environment? How do we survive as artists in that environment? And I view The Good Atheist as kind of like my kick at the can of saying, here's how I think you can do it. So the hope is that not only can we make a living doing this, which we partially are, I mean, the honest truth is we just need to grow. That's it. We just need to grow. But once I am, and to show other people saying, like, this is a way that you can go about and make a living doing something you love and that other people love. And that would ultimately be my fucking dream.
Okay, Jaeger Cormack asks, what would a community of atheists be like? I find myself only in religion land wherever I go. Are there any atheist places to live, or are there just conferences?
Man, go to like Scandinavia, dog. go to Europe. See what it's like to live in a secular place.
Well, you know, lots of European places are now being divided with this whole Muslim question as well. And it's gotten pretty heavy like that. I guess you have to wear blinders to a certain degree in Canada because we got that same racism going on.
Yeah, well, definitely. You don't want to be too ashamed of the people around you, but sometimes the things they say are pretty shameful.
Yeah, so I don't know. I looked up where Jaeger was from. He's from Canada too, so it's like, damn. If Canada ain't non-religious enough for you, then yeah, maybe like Finland or something like that.
Yeah, Sweden. Probably your best bet. And there's some pretty hot chicks over there from what I understand. Love Scandinavian chicks. Hot.
Okay, Dayton asks, what are your thoughts about qi or chi and practices like qigong, which attempt to control and manipulate it? My understanding is that qigong, like most qi techniques, involve the universal energy for healing purposes. Is there a difference between this invocation and that of the fervent televangelist when he/she heals patrons of a church?
Okay, my understanding of qi is, picture you're in ancient China and you're trying to explain this really important question. What is the difference between life and non-life? You know, that right now, that seems obvious to us, being able to tell the difference. But back in the day, how could you tell the difference, right? It looked like it was made of stuff. Some of it was hard, some of it was soft. one was alive and the other was not. And you're like, what is the difference? So there's the belief in chi is the belief in that kind of energy, the animated energy that allows you to go from being a lifeless object to being one with life. And based on that belief, there came to be an entire mythology of where chi was produced, where basically it flowed, and what were its rhythms, and all other kind of nonsense that you would expect from people who believed something so profoundly wrong that they never even really questioned the basic belief of it at all. Like, they're more interested in the nuances of asking themselves questions like, how many angels can fit on the head of a pin? And when you start asking yourself that question, you're so far along that you don't even have time to entertain, is this ludicrous? Is this idea stupid? You know, the thing that you should always probably do about these big ideas that you have, is this ludicrous?
Yeah, we're playing Risk and they're playing Candyland.
Yeah. They're playing Snakes and Ladders.
I mean, they're playing Candyland very well.
Well, they're, you know, just because you believe in a very infantile idea does not mean that you yourself are an infant. It's just that, you know, different aspects of your thinking can be juvenile, all right? We see this all the time in adults that have weird juvenile tendencies that don't go away. And we normally regard these things as deficiencies or even problems. You know, like a person who has a juvenile concept of sex as an adult, you know, these what basically becomes child molesters, we have a problem with that. You're like, you're an adult now, okay? You need to move into the adult world.
So we've just basically compared people who believe in chi to child molesters. I like that. Okay, Dayton also wants to know what your opinion of acupuncture is.
Well, that ties me into the whole thing about acupuncture, is that once you start making these wild claims about how chi works, they had this belief that there were these pressure points, you know, what Indians would call chakras, that you could basically tap into to release these gases, because they viewed gas, chi gas, as sort of positive and negative gas. Like, when you feel bad, it's because you got bad chi, and then you got your good chi, and the kind of foods that give you the good and the bad chi. They have a whole list, man. They have a fucking pharmacopoeia of things that give you bad or good chi. And it's all nonsense, of course. It's all ludicrous. What do I think about poking yourself with needles? I sure hope they're sterilized. That's what I'm just going to say. Sure hope they're sterilized, but otherwise, you're wasting your fucking time. Honestly, what do you think is going on here, huh? They're putting needles in you. They're putting needles in you. The best research that we have about acupuncture is, of course, that, hey, there's nothing better than the placebo effect. If there was a better measurement of it, we would see these studies. There isn't. It's poking someone with needles.
Yeah, speaking of placebo, I hear placebo is doing better and better.
Yeah?
Yeah, like in scientific studies, placebo just keeps on getting better.
It's amazing. Positive thinking.
Soon placebo is going to be the shit.
It's going to be the bomb. It's going to be curing 90% of everything.
Yep.
Just everyone's like, you're so healthy that you just need to stop being worried about shit. And then you'll be healthy, like more healthy. Maybe okay. That's the great human tragedy.
Zombie Jesus asks, how poor would you need to be to sell out your swearing for sponsorships? This goes for Ryan, too.
You can answer that question better than me.
If we haven't done it by now, then we're not going to do it, because I can't see us getting any poorer than this.
I would say that, you know what, I don't think it's going to be necessary moving forward. And I really don't want to, I want to try to do this thing without compromising, because I think that the ideas behind it are important, that other people need to be, you know, are going to need to do what we do. It's going to be an opportunity for folks. I promise you this. Well, yeah, it's a Jacob promise, so, you know, take it or leave it. But I still think it's important. You know, I want to do things, at least in The Good Atheist. I'm not going to speak for Ryan's project, Fight Linker, but for Good Atheist, I can tell you, I don't want to compromise on this motherfucker. And it would be useless. Who's going to sponsor me, huh? Scholes? What? No. Sponsorship, not possible. Sponsorship is done by people like you. You are my sponsors. I only need a couple hundred more, and that is it. That's all I need, a couple hundred more. I already have a few hundred. I need a few hundred more, and we're good. So you ask me sort of like what I need to sell out. I'm just like, hey, guys, can you help me find more? Seriously, when you're sitting down listening to this and you're like, what should I do to help The Good Atheist? Tell people about it, okay? That fills my coffers. Literally, it will.
Okay, Chocobar asks, religious belief doesn't seem to play a big part in Canadian politics. Do you think it's because Canadians know how to keep it separate, or is it the Conservative Party waiting for a majority to bring on the Christian policies?
Well, you know, we're not really that. I think the problem with Canadian politics is everybody who goes in there is fundamentally boring. and they're not even exciting enough to bring in religious rhetoric or whatever. They're also boring. Have you ever watched, like, Canadian, like, what is it, CPAC in Canada? What is it?
I think it's CPAC. Yeah.
Have you ever watched CPAC? Mm-hmm. I mean, you thought the American stuff was boring. The Canadian stuff's even worse. If you want to break up a riot, start talking politics. That's a very famous Canadian joke. All right? That's how we feel about politics. So it's just because I think we lack passion in absolutely everything we do. It's shameful.
Well, there's also the fact that just procedurally, you can't get away with as much as you can. We aren't at that point in Canada now where you can just say batshit insane stuff and get away with it. You'll get held accountable and you'll be told to step down.
Yeah, people really can't take... Like, if you started talking in the rhetoric of war, which is, say, like the Sarah Palin speak, where you're like, don't give up, you need to reload. You're like, what kind of rhetoric are you using? Reload? You're constantly using these images here. What do you think people are thinking about it when you're using those kinds of words? If you were talking like this in Canada, everybody would be like, whoa, what the hell's going on here? What the hell do you think you're doing? We're not, what are you, trying to start a fight here?
We're not at that yet. And, you know, not to say that we aren't just one good shove away, because, yeah, we probably are. But at the moment, it seems like, I don't know, civilized discourse is still around. Maybe
it's still a Canadian thing for the most part.
Yeah.
Civil discourse. It's a good thing. But it's also, in my view, sometimes a bad thing because we're dragging pussies who don't get anything done.
Because sometimes you just need a Catholic benevolent dictator to control everything.
Who's going
to
tell you what you need.
So that you can have those glorious Middle Ages all over again.
Weren't they awesome?
They were the best. So much happened in that span of time.
Well, you can go back and read it all in the... Oh, wait. It's the Dark Ages.
They burnt all those books. Okay, Grant asks, how do you deal with bigotry, especially in your family and from those who you respect or are meant to respect? I personally live in a very religious home with a father and brother that note everything as God's work, say that God wanted them to do something, and use God's wisdom as an answer to every question that contradicts their belief. I dealt with it by just avoiding them. That's all I can do, and I'll be living with them for at least another 2 years.
Oh. Well, you know. Hopefully you get some kind of relief from listening to the show, because 2 years sounds like a long time to be dealing with that. You know, I can tell you from personal experience, at my workplace, the people there are nice, but most of the guys at the workplace there are clearly homophobic. Clearly. Like, I've had discussions with them saying, like, I don't want you guys to talk about that shit. It's not work appropriate. And, you know, that's coming from me. But at the same time, I'm like, look, one gay dude walks in here and you start talking like that and you will bankrupt the company. I'm like, I'm not joking. The way that you talk about it, no, you got to stop that. And trying to get them out of that habit. When I'm their boss, I can't even get them to do it. So as you, the probably, I assume, younger
sibling
and son, you don't have much of a hope in hell to get anybody to change their mind. You know, I am still trying to convince my father that homosexuality is not weird, gross, or unnatural. I've managed to get him off the whole natural thing. When I told him to put his money where his mouth was. He was like, oh, it's not natural. I said, really, Dad? I bet you $1,000 I can find 10 examples of homosexuality in other animals. $1,000. He did not take that bet, nor did he ever talk about how it was not natural anymore. He learned his lesson. I'm like, I schooled you, and that is it.
So maybe this is what we can suggest, is make bets. Make easily, small, easily provable bets.
There you go. Ben, respond
away,
to bets.
To chip away, and if you aren't able to get their respect or get them to change their minds, at least maybe you'll get their money.
Yep, you'll get their money. That's what you got to do. This is our advice to everybody out there. Start betting with religious people.
But this seems like a pretty crappy situation. Do we have actually a serious answer for that?
Okay, one that doesn't cause like the degree of conflict that my idea would probably generate? Is that what you're referring to?
One that at least has maybe the possibility of look into this more and maybe you'll find a solution.
Bigotry's tough, man. It's really hard to get a person to either admit that they're a bigot or to change their mind about it, because people are either in denial about their bigotry and they're like, oh, I'm not a bigot, I'm just joking around. When you can always clearly tell when someone's aggressive about it, you know? I can take a certain degree of ignorance when a person says it, But it's the aggressiveness that really kind of gets to me. And if it's to the point where it's aggressive, you can't work with that. I'm telling you that right now. But if it's always sort of like joking, somewhat inappropriate, and you know you could work through that, I think the important thing is to just get a person to be able to empathize with who they're talking about. You know, I think one of the last episodes I talked about my dad and how, you know, I would have described him as definitely a racist against black people. Something that he had to deal with when his daughter married a black man. Okay? And
oh, karma.
Yeah, seriously.
You don't exist, but I love you anyways.
It's like, it was never to the point where I would say this is, you know, sort of like, you know, Alabama style hate. Because, I had best friends that were black and my dad got along with them. But I think that to some degree, he may not have respected them as much as he would have respected anybody else from the get-go. And I think that's the subtlety of that of prejudice, when you don't look at someone in the same way that you would see yourself. You know, like maybe there's something about him that makes him less intelligent, less like me, because he has something different. But when my dad met his darker counterpart, his darker English counterpart, there was, I think, an interesting thing that happened. Really, the final phases of that bigotry really kind of left them, and I've not heard of it since, like, at all. And I have to believe that to some degree, it's just that now he empathizes with someone that he previously couldn't. My advice is, if you can find a way to make that happen, I don't know how, but they need to empathize, because empathy is a natural human response. It just needs to be triggered, man. You just need to put people in situations, and the rest takes care of itself. They'll become good people despite themselves. That's the beauty of, like, the kind of mechanisms, inherent mechanisms that we have, you know, as human beings.
Yeah, you might not be able to change how they are and how they attribute everything to God, but you might be able to change kind of how they perceive you, and as a result of that, other atheists, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good start. That's definitely a good start.
Okay. Jake Farr Wharton asks, you've recently discussed agnosticism. I'd like you to discuss the real fence-sitters who actively debate their friends and family on matters of philosophy and spirituality, but check themselves off as Christian at census time.
Wasn't that you? Didn't you do that?
Well, here's the thing. I think everybody, even most atheists, remember what they quote-unquote were, you know? What church their family comes from. I am a Protestant. You are... Your dad went to Catholic, didn't Catholic nuns beat him?
Yeah.
So, yeah, so he was Catholic.
He was, yeah, but he didn't pass on that tradition to me.
I know, but just when you're looking at the census and they ask you what you are, I mean, you know, right up until this point, I think this is one of the first generations where, you know, to a certain degree, they were never really asking you what you believe. They just wanted to know if you were a fucking Protestant or a Catholic or what the deal was.
When that mattered a lot more.
Exactly.
I would say, I mean, I actually feel that to some degree, the real fence sitters are not the ones who check mark themselves as Christian, but really the ones that check mark themselves as agnostics. Like, I'll say it again. I mean, I'm sure I have fucking people that listen and are agnostic, and they're like, no, I will not label myself as an atheist. And I'm sure if I couldn't convince you last episode, last bonus show, then I'll probably not be able to do so. But the only thing that now that I'm finding is that there's a few agnostics that are really starting to put les bâtons dans les roues for a lot of atheists, is saying, oh, you're just as fundamentalist as the religious counterparts, and really kind of using rhetoric that I'm just like, what the fuck, dude? What the fuck? What team are you on? If you're not going to play ball, don't trip me up. Like, just sit back and shut the fuck up. That's your position. Shut the fuck up.
Okay, Matt asks, do you ever feel just feel completely apathetic towards religious nonsense? How do you deal with it?
Well, you used to be much more apathetic, I think, than you were now.
I still am large. You know, I'm not going to say I'm largely apathetic, but you know, it is. It's a mental exercise to a certain degree. We are raging against the machine here. So,
true. You can feel worn out and just not want to do it. So how we deal with it is that normally, I'll tell you how I. It's not apathy that gets me through it. It's just that I'm usually will be distracted with something else long enough that it's not bothering me or keeping me up. So my suggestion to anybody who wants to try to practice to be less frustrated, take up a hobby, man. Take up a hobby. My hobby was weird. It's recording atheist podcasts. So perhaps that's defeating the purpose. But take up another hobby other than atheist podcasts.
Yeah, but there's nothing wrong with feeling apathetic. If you're feeling apathetic, don't feel like you have to stop being generally apathetic. You can let that just sit and dwell for several years. You don't have to be hardcore about it. On the other hand, if you want to get out of it, you know, read one of those atheist books that you've been thinking about reading for a long time but haven't. I mean, if there's a new Sam Harris book out that you haven't read and you're feeling apathetic and you want to get out of that zone, he's pretty good for that. He's pretty good.
And you know what? I think you'll find a lot of people that have moved out of apathy feel a lot better, because to some degree, part of the apathy is always holding yourself back because you're afraid of what other people might think due to your strong opinions. You know, you're saying, I don't want to voice my opinions about this because I might rattle some cages and people might dislike me if I do this. But at the same time, I mean, there's a lot of people that just want to talk about it because they're sick and tired of having nothing, of not being able to say anything or speak up about it. And like I said, this is a historically unique time where we can fucking do that. And it feels good when you do. You're just like, I'm not going to stand up for this anymore. I'm going to talk about it, that this isn't right. And if you feel that way, trust me, when you stand up for things that you really believe in or that you think are important, it feels good. It does feel good.
Plus, sooner or later, there's always going to be another kid getting molested, another woman being murdered. You know, all sorts of crazy stuff going on because of religion.
We've only just begun. Yeah, that's where we are.
Okay, Lee asks, religion is on trial by all the... This is, I guess, a hypothetical situation.
Okay.
Religion is on trial by all the nations of the world, and we're going to settle this thing once and for all. One person represents religion, one represents atheism. Everybody on Earth will accept the results of the trial decided by a completely impartial judge. We either become an entirely religious or entirely atheist world forevermore. You, Jake,
oh boy,
are making the case for atheism.
Oh,
you can
no.
make one statement to convince the world. What is your knockdown argument against religion which will result on a decision in favor of atheism? And what is the one argument religion could make that could win the case for a religious world?
It's a pretty fucking huge question, but I'll try to tackle it. Okay, I've been thinking about this a lot in a variety of ways. How would you sum it up? And I think I've been talking a lot about this with you, but I don't think I've mentioned on many of the podcasts, is this view that I have about how to try and identify the worthiness or the correctness of any ideology, right? Because you could say that even though atheism itself is a denial of an ideology, that it is still an ism, you know, that we cannot deny that it is an ism to some degree. But the thing about atheism in comparison to all these other beliefs is that it is not a belief that requires other people to also believe in it. You know, where monotheism requires that everybody believe in God. This is the belief of it. You know, this is at the crux of it. That historically speaking, this is not a belief that can tolerate disbelief. It has a strong suspicion of disbelief. And I think the reason for that is just because of the very nature of atheism, that if you really don't have an idea that's obligatory, that automatically creates conflict from its inception, I'm using this word again, that it's probably a superior idea. Superior in the way that if I was to measure which idea would seem to me the least likely to cause conflict, I would throw up red flags as soon as you had, well, does this idea create, something that it must now conflict with? And you could argue, well, atheism does that by denying God, but atheism is not the denial of God, really. It's not a position at all, in a sense. God is a claim. No, God is not a claim. That is the opposite of a claim. We make no claim. You know, at the end of the day, the claim is actually coming from religious people. They are making a strong, improvable claim. Now, to answer the second question of how could religion win, is that we have been trying to measure if there's any supernatural power whatsoever out there. And if we make this basic assumption of, let's say we examine how we compare as human beings in terms of our level of consciousness to an ant, okay? You look down in the ant, and the ant has a certain kind of consciousness. It, quote-unquote, knows what it's doing. It's making decisions. It's being part of even a larger conscious organism, a superorganism in a hive mind. So it has a degree of consciousness. You could technically communicate with that ant if you were leaving behind chemical markers, for instance, right? You could communicate with the ant, there's food here. You could do a really simple communication with something that can't communicate with you because it doesn't have the same level of consciousness that you do. It's not aware of itself. It's not aware of you. Now, maybe there is a supreme being whose consciousness himself exceeds our own and we can't possibly comprehend it. But that doesn't mean that that entity couldn't do the same thing that you could do to an ant, to still communicate with us, to still show evidence of his existence. And so far, what do we have? No evidence. In fact, that everything that we've ever spent time researching has pushed this whole God thing further and further to the outskirts, where people have to do huge mental leaps to make God fit with what they know about science. You know, I talk about Kenneth Miller as a perfect example, the guy who defended science in the Dover trials. Is a Catholic. You know, he believes in the divinity of Jesus. He has to do huge mental leaps to make that work because everything that we've found so far is like, there's no hand of God so far. There really isn't. And if you go down to the postulate of like what started it all, again, the idea that you have to bring upon a God, I find is one idea too many. Why is that? Why do you suddenly believe that that's where the answer lies? Then what created God? What about all these other questions that come up? Atheism requires no such question. You can be open to the idea that perhaps there is such a thing as a God, but in that ism, it's not creating inherently that conflict. It's like a God may or may not exist. We merely take the position that there is no proof. This is not conflict. So that's what my argument would be. What do you think?
Not bad.
All right. Well, you know, you guys can email.
I give it a 6 out of 10.
6 out of 10. You guys can email me if it's higher than a 6, which I find is cruel. I like the ant God thing.
I wanted to give you some figure skating judging, just a little FU.
I'm glad you're on my side.
Okay, Banta asks, I've just been wondering how Jeff gets his hair so sexy like that. I've only seen a few things of it, but it's so kick-ass. Please don't judge me. Lol, sorry this wasn't serious, but I sort of am. So he is serious about Jeff's hair being sexy.
Okay, well, Jeff's probably listening to this right now, so he would want me to say that he uses cool conditioners. No, I don't know. Some people could just have cool hair, and Jeff decides to put interesting colors in his. He cannot have normal colored hair for long periods of time. It feels boring to him, so I can appreciate the fact that he wants to color it up. Because, you know, I can't do that. I don't have hair no more.
Yeah, I used to do it, and then my hair all fell out.
Yeah, like I'm suffering the pains of male pattern baldness slowly but surely, folks. Slowly but surely. So as we progress, the little cartoon up there, this is the Good Atheist. Probably I have to sort of like change where that little black line is indicating my hairline. Just make subtle alterations every year until it's all gone, baby. Until it's all gone, or I look like one of those Franciscan monks. Yuck.
Okay, we've got three more quick ones. Let's burn through them. Michael asks, I think that it'd be interesting to explore the dynamics between the Christian view of Satanism, blood sacrifice, ritualistic murder, slitting of goats' throats, and all that, with the idea of Christianity itself. It's interesting to note that all of these things exist in Christianity, and in fact, it's based heavily on similar ideologies. Christianity equals Satanism plus more.
Don't you think it's really kind of funny, though, that everybody used to freak out in the cults? Remember the whole 1980s... scare of the cults?
Yeah, mass. It was literally classified as a hysteria.
Yeah, it was a social hysteria, and it was everybody believing that there were Satanists out there and they were performing rituals,
like a lot of them.
But what's really funny is that if we boil down these rituals, they're not that different from ancient Hebrew rituals of sacrificing animals on altars, of pronouncing weird phrases when you're doing it, and having odd customs. Like, there's a part of the Bible that says that you have to cook your bread with human shit. You know, that part of the fire being stalked is your own excrement. It's pretty weird, okay? If you said this cult made you cook your bread with your poo, you'd be like, what the fuck is that about, right? Well, nobody really does that anymore because we recognize it as ludicrous. But as soon as somebody brings it back, you're like, scary. I'm like, it's your religion. They're sacrificing goats rather than sheep. That's the big difference. You're like, one looks more evil, I guess, than the other. One's fur is rattier, I suppose.
It's definitely something that we don't play up as much as we should, because there is a lot of hilarious similarities.
Yeah, I mean, sure.
You know what? And ironically, I think there's probably more child molestation going on in Christianity than in Satanism.
Yeah, there's probably none going on there because most Satanists are actually, it's a joke.
It's a figment of imagination.
It's hilarious. Satanists are actually, what's the word I'm looking for when you, they're hedonists. That's really what they are. The whole thing is about hedonism. It's not about blood sacrifice or any of that nonsense.
Isn't there so many different people who say Satanism is so many different things?
I guess so. But the most popular form of Satanism is a type of hedonism. It's not interested in destroying what's good. It's just interested in having some fun, basically. So that's the worst they do. They have some fun.
Okay, Daryl asked, is it morally acceptable to pretend to be a Christian to get laid?
I don't know if it's morally acceptable, but how many guys out there lie in
order
to get
laid? About something.
Yeah, about something. You could lie being, oh, I have a really great job. Liar. You know, I have all these really interesting projects going on. You big phony.
Most guys lie about how lame they are to get laid.
Yep. And I'm sure that there are plenty of people who do pretend to be Christians to get laid because they're like, I don't care about Christianity. This chick that I love is Christian. I'm just going to pretend to be. So it can have some sweet elements to it, too. He's like, I'm just never going to fucking tell her that her beliefs are ludicrous because I love her that much. Hey, more power to you if that's your relationship. That ain't me. It's not me.
Okay, Brian Elliott, this is the last one, asks, also, what's your opinion on nuclear power?
I am actually, I wouldn't say I'm a fan, but I say bring it on. I say bring it on, but really what we have to do is if you're going to bring it on, you have to build the new ones that they're designing now, not the old ones that are no good, all right? It keeps on getting easier and easier to harness that power directly because, you know, back in most of the nuclear power plants is like boilers, right? They're boiling water, and you're like, certainly we can do something better to capture that energy other than boil water to spin turbines. Come on now. But it's harder than it looks to transfer one form of energy to another.
Yeah, when you take a closer look at all of the power sources that we have, they usually end up doing something pretty basic, like turning a cog.
Pretty much, man. That's how power is generated. And you're just, you know, there are new interesting developments in nuclear power that are going in other directions, kind of like similar to like the way that solar power works, where it's like it's the particles hitting like these panels that are activating it. Whatever. There's some really cool shit happening with nuclear power, and it's not like what it used to be.
Yeah, Bill Gates has something that he's working on where basically the way it used to work is that you'd end up with a whole bunch of waste, and you'd get a little bit of use out of the good stuff, and now they're figuring out a way to use all the waste to get power out of that.
Right. I mean, you just have to think that as the thing decays, there's power there. The problem is that some of it decaying is deadly to us. Okay, I'll admit that's a problem, but it's not insurmountable, okay? We're pretty smart. We can start to figure out ways around this. Like, the whole fear is that we're not going to know what to do with all this waste. I'm like, I bet you that waste, they're going to go back and they're going to take it in again. They're like, this isn't waste anymore. We figured out something to do with it. You know, there's still something to harness there. Once it becomes inert, then we have a problem. Then our power source is exhausted. But the amazing thing about radioactive elements is they take a long time to exhaust themselves. The half-life of uranium is 4 billion years. It's what we use a lot of time to, like, tell what the age of shit is. And there's a lot of it on this planet. A significant portion of the Earth's core is still maintained, like, the heat is maintained through radiation. So it's also life-giving. People don't just get scared of it because you just remember all these people getting sick off nuclear juice and stuff like that and all these horrible things happening. Yes, there can be problems. That's why you don't make that shit sloppy. That's why you're saying this has to be heavily mandated as opposed to sort of privatized, let's say. You're just like, no, there will be strict rules. And it's not a quest for profit. It is a quest basically to provide power and advance the human race. That's the purpose of this one.
Oh, stupid, Jacob. Don't you know that capitalism is the best way to advance the human race?
To do everything.
And it all needs to be based on how much money people can make.
That sounds like a great idea. Sounds like a great idea. Okay, well, I think that wraps up the show. My little communist rant, I guess. I love how people would think that that's communistic.
What, pro-nuclear power?
No, that you're saying, like, well, it should be heavily mandated. Commie! You're like, No, this is nuclear power, people. Let's not dick around here, okay? There are still dangers. I'm not going to deny it. The dangers for me are really the disposal. But I feel that we should take a different approach when it comes to the waste and see that there may be other potential uses to this waste that we're not seeing now because we just don't have the technology for it. But this could be a really important and big way for people to move away from fossil fuels. It could power us, the whole world, for about 150 years if we used all of it that we have.
If we put about 100 years into it, I'm pretty sure we could figure out
other sources by then. That's my point. Like, it's a good stopover. And the other thing, too, is that when you start running low, what source are people going to draw from? They're like, oh, our power plants are running low. How about we take some from these missiles that don't seem to be doing anything? Yeah, I like the idea of using radioactive material for something positive because now that puts the price of radioactive material, you know, like makes it more precious. Makes it so that you want to convert it to power rather than convert it into gigantic explodies. So I dig it on multiple levels. I dig it. Let's use it. It's gonna need to be used. It's decaying on its own, people.
You've got that 60s optimism about nuclear power?
Fuck yeah, man. Fuck yeah. Radioactive things make superheroes, too, like Spider-Man. All right, well, before we go, I'd like to remind everybody that we have a bonus show that we have paying patrons that basically feel that it's worth investing in. And we have a patron, actually, that has inspired me to do the next show on how I view the world through atheist eyes. Because he wanted me to explain how I view the world itself from my atheist standpoint.
Your dirty atheist eyes.
Right, my dirty atheist eyes. And like last show, if you absolutely must listen to this show, but you're like, I can't give you money, Jake. And I'm like, just email me and I'll send it to you. I'll do it. I will give you a link, and you can listen to the show. If you need it so bad that you're just basically prostrating yourself, you can have the damn show.
If you got a craving, and you aren't smart enough to just go back into the hundreds of free archive shows and check something else out.
If you just want the latest shit, I'll give you the latest shit. But you got to ask, and you got to ask politely. And I might ask for something back in return, like your thoughts on the show. That's an important element of it. If I give you that the show, and you guys listen to it, you have to tell me what you thought about the show. That's my simple little, you know, tit for tat. Hey, little something for something. I want to know what you thought, you know, because a lot of you don't talk to me. And I want to hear much more of your feedback. That's going to be important as well when we're going to be developing the new website, where it's going to go. We're going to require a lot of fan feedback. So when people are emailing me saying, like, hey, how can I help? And they're like, make yourself available when I have a lot of questions. We want to build a environment for you guys. So it's going to require your input. You know, it's going to you telling us what you want and us trying to make it happen. It's basically that simple. Okay, well, with that, my name is Jacob Forte.
I'm Ryan Harkness.
Have a good atheist day, everybody.